Welcome to Local Talk Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in the counties of our listening area in central Iowa. I'm one of your hosts for today, Susan Franzen, here with my co-host, Paul Wearson. Hello, Paul.
Well, hello, Susan, and hello to all our listeners out there. We're here for our Christmas program, but it doesn't look like we're going to have a white Christmas.
While that's true for most in our listening area, it's not true where I live, near the ski slope at Seven Oaks Recreation Center. And so I called Joel Bryan, the manager, and he's going to be joining us.
Hello, this is Joel.
Hi, Joel. This is Susan Franzen at KHOI. And we're calling about what's happening out at Seven Oaks. I happen to live on Mongona Road, so I've been watching all the snowmaking that you've been doing, and I've been curious about when it's going to be open. And so could you tell us what the story is this year?
Well, of course, the Mother Nature isn't cooperating quite like she did the last couple of years. But we were able to make snow last week for two consecutive days, which gave us enough snow to open up this past Sunday at 11 a.m. We opened with two runs, one chairlift, and some terrain park features. At this point, we're going to stay closed until the day after Christmas, which would be the 26th. And, you know, between now and the day after Christmas, hope that we can get at least a couple more nights of snowmaking in to open up even more runs and possibly more lift starting next Saturday. We've converted right around 2 million gallons of water into snow this past week. And so, you know, we're not 100% white on all of the slopes, but the slopes that we do have open are fully covered with a 12-inch base from top to bottom.
Is this an unusual situation to have so little natural snow at this time of year?
Not necessarily unusual for natural snow. I would say the unusual part is just having the mild temperatures. You know, it's not uncommon to have some higher temperatures for 3 or 4 days, but to have the consistently 5 to 10 and even 15 degrees above normal happen week after week, that's definitely abnormal.
By the way, I'm Paul. I'm Susan's co-host, and I'd like to know, what percentage do you think of the folks out on the slope are snowboarders?
Oh, kind of depends on the day. I mean, yesterday we were definitely heavy on the snowboards because a lot of season passers were out. But I would say in any given season, the average is probably 40% are snowboard, 60% still ski.
Yeah, well, I was watching a segment on CBS this morning, and there was a ski area probably in out west where there's a real war between the skiers and the snowboarders, and they're not very happy with each other. Do you see that tension there?
No, not at all. And actually, you don't see that tension in many places. You know, I'm not sure which ski areas that they were talking about or which one in particular, but there has been a couple of ski areas that have maintained and said that snowboarders weren't allowed. And so that has definitely caused some friction over the years. But we don't see any of it here at all. And actually, there's just a lot of our clientele both ski and snowboard, so that could be the reason for us.
Actually, if you drive by a ski area, I can't believe what you could do on a snowboard. It's great.
It's unreal. Yeah. It's unreal. It's taken the ski industry to a whole new level, and it continues to get stronger and stronger every year.
I hope that you have many people enjoying it with you during the rest of the year and beyond.
Yeah, Joe, I hope we get some seasonable winter weather with a great base and people coming in every day to enjoy your wonderful facility there. And I love entrepreneurial businesses, particularly ones that are brave enough to be seasonal. So good
Absolutely.
Luck to
you. Well, I appreciate that.
Well, thanks a lot.
Uh-huh.
We've been talking to Joel Bryan over at Seven Oaks Recreation Area. And the season officially starts, what, the 26th, the day after Christmas?
Well, we actually started this past Sunday.
Right.
And
yes.
So we opened, and then we'll reopen on the 26th of December.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. We'll see you guys.
We'll have information on our website for anyone who wants to know hours and more details.
And it's going to be fun for anyone to go over there once winter actually begins. And I'm an Iowan. I know this can't last, this warm weather. Snowless, I just don't believe it's going to last. So I think Joe's going to have a good time and a good season. Well, that's really the creative spirit in central Iowa. If your surroundings don't provide what you need, you just use your ingenuity to create it, right?
Yeah, I think that's the spirit of our show today, too. We'll start out with a little nostalgia with the antique toys and letters to Santa at the Slater Area Historical Association and move on to discuss how we face the Christmas blues that come from the heightened expectations and pressures that many people feel this season.
Well, that sounds like a tall order. How do you plan to address the Christmas blues, Susan?
We'll start with some humor, with singer-songwriter Reggie Greenlaw singing "I Don't Want No Ho-Ho-Hos," followed by a reflection on the ways we celebrate at this time of year with ISU Professor of Religion, Brian Esslinger.
Well, I hope we'll have some stories, too. They're always good for cheering people up.
Yes, we have a couple. But I think I'll keep the subjects a secret. After all this, is the time of year for surprises?
Well, let's get started with the Dear Santa exhibit of letters, pictures, and toys from the 40s, 50s, and 60s. I remember that. I think that old Bing Crosby's song, "It's Beginning to Look a Lot Like Christmas," would bring an extra vintage touch to the whole thing.
That's just what I thought, too. So you'll hear snatches of that song throughout the tour Mary O'Donnell gave us at the Slater Area Historical Association last Sunday.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas everywhere you go. Take a look in the 5 and 10, glistening once again, with candy canes and silver lanes aglow. It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas. Toys in every store. But the prettiest sight to see is the holly that will be on your own front door.
Slater Area's Historical Association presents Dear Santa, featuring letters to Santa published in the Slater News with photos, antique toys, and decorations from the 40s, 50s, and 60s. And it's on display through January 15th, and our hours are Saturday 9 to 12, Sunday 1 to 4, and Thursday 10 to 2. And you can call 515-480-9789 or 515-228-3293 for an appointment anytime. Every year, kids would write letters to Santa in the grade schools, and they would send them into the Slater News, and the paper would publish them. And then what they would do is also for the older grades, like the 5th and 6th, they might write a little story or some poems. But it was mostly letters to Santa and what I would like to get for Christmas and what I would like to. Some of them were I would like to have, even back then, world peace. The little kids were talking about that. So what we did when we decided to do this is we went through the old newspapers. And we pulled out some of the funnier ones or the most unusual ones or the most touching ones. And then wherever possible, if there was a particular toy mentioned, we tried to get an example of that toy or at least a picture. And then a lot of them will talk about their brothers and sisters, what the brothers and sisters want. Santa's Paws, P-A-U-S-E. On Christmas Eve at our house, when comes old Santa Claus, he comes into our living room, and it's known as Santa's Paws. For Louise, a blouse, a grayish skirt, a mirror comb and brush. For Mary, there's a sweater and a coat of softest plush. Mike gets a wristwatch and a camera with a flash. Danny doesn't get too much, for all he wants is cash. Margie's list is very long, and Santa does his best. Jackie gets a brand new horse to add to all the rest. Robbie wants a bicycle, but Santa's not that wealthy. Charlie wants a microscope to see what makes him healthy. Jody wants a doll and house to pile up in her room. Pat wants a rocket ship to ride up to the moon. Tommy gets a set of guns to draw and fight and shoot. Evie gets a shiny horn to toot and toot and toot. And now we come to little Al. He isn't big at all, so Santa's going to leave him a big red shiny ball. On Christmas Eve at our house, when comes old Santa Claus, he comes into our living room, and it's known as Santa's Paws. And that's Jackie, and I think she was about third or fourth grade at that time. This is my brother Charlie. And he says, I like science and beauty. I would like a chemistry set, a camera, and film. Please bring these toys. And if you can't bring me the toys, at least bring me the camera or film. And he is now a computer engineer who does designs and makes his own furniture. So this gives a little idea of who he was then and what he grew into. For Christmas, will you bring me a Jerry Mahoney? How are your reindeer and all the workers and elves? And you better not forget the poor people. It says, Dear Santa, I would like a safe to keep my money in. My brother gets into my keys and unlocks my door and things. And it says, Love, David Dunlap. David Dunlap was the son of the banker. So he wanted a safe, just like in the bank, to keep his brother out of his stuff. And we put out the word, and a lot of people brought in their toy collections. We've got the Lincoln Logs, and one of our board members just sat down and built a little log cabin. So he was playing with that. We've got Tinker Toys. We've got Erector Sets. We've got ice skates. We've got dolls. We've got tractors. We've got a little cowboy outfit from back in the 30s that one of our guys who's now in his nearing his 80s wore when he was a kid. It's really cute. But it's very interesting. We try to get things that Slater people can relate to, but also that have kind of a universal appeal, like some of these letters and some of the things that might trigger their own memories of what went on when they were kids. And also, it kind of gives today's kids an idea of what was available then, because it has changed so much. And it's kind of a little comment on what was going on in the 50s, too, because most of the boys want guns, and most of the girls want dolls.
A pair of hopalong boots and a pistol that shoots is the wish of Barney and Ben. Dolls that will talk and will go for a walk is the hope of Janice and Jen. And Mom and Dad can hardly wait for school to start again.
Dear Santa, please bring me nice toys like a battle wagon and a Tiger Joe and a snub-nosed 38 and a helicopter and 30-caliber machine gun and a dartboard and a rifle. Santa, how is Rudolph, your friend Andy? One that the letter that I just said, we've got a picture on the top of two little boys from the 50s in their pajamas, but with their gun belt strapped on, and they're shooting their cap gun at guns at each other. And then we have a picture of Roy Rogers underneath that. There's a letter here that says, my brother wants a gun. He's going to shoot me dead. Boy, is he going to have fun. I'll have to push him on our sled until I nearly drop dead. Then I'm sure he will say, get with it, kid. I want to play. Over here on the other side, where from the boys' guns, we have little girls who have play sets for the kitchen. They're cooking up. They're wearing aprons and beating up eggs and things like that. They have nurse outfits. They have bride and groom dolls. They have little ironing boards, and there's a little cupboard, an actual cupboard, that's red. It's about 3 feet tall, and it is just filled with little miniature pots and pans and mixers and cookie cutters. And in the back, there's a little nurse's kit as well. And we just have a few things from the period, like aluminum Christmas trees. There's a picture, and we actually have an aluminum Christmas tree with the revolving light back in the corner there that's going right now. So it turns different colors as the light revolves. It's just kind of a overall picture of what was going on during the 50s and early 60s. This doll down here, somebody said she wanted a bride doll, and this actually is a doll that is wearing a copy of a wedding dress that was her mother's. And the veil that she has on, actually, it was the bride's veil, so it was put on the doll. Over here, we've got somebody wanted a life-size doll, and it actually is the size of a little girl that's about 5 years old, which is just fantastic.
There's a plate over there with Christmas cookies.
Yes.
In fact, it looks like maybe people have actually been eating those Christmas cookies.
We have two or three of The ladies got together and they baked Christmas cookies and they decorated them. And every time we are open, we have an assortment of cookies out.
And you have several Christmas trees. You have one in a pot, that aluminum tree, and then there's another one over here in front of your fireplace.
And then we also encourage people over here to maybe write a Dear Santa letter of their own. We have a little mailbox, and some of those are kind of amusing, too. Somebody said, "Dear Santa, please send us some good candidates for president."
Sure, it's Christmas once more.
Thank you, Mary. That was Mary O'Donnell, who was our guide for the Dear Santa exhibit at the Slater Area Historical Society. Letters to Santa, along with pictures, decorations, and vintage toys from the 40s, 50s, and 60s. The exhibit is up until January 15th. Regular hours are Saturdays from 9 to 12, Sundays from 1 to 4, and Thursdays from 1 to 2. And next Thursday, Christmas Eve day, it will be open from 1 to 2 in case you want to really get a feeling of an old-fashioned Christmas. And if you can't make it any of those times, you're invited to call for an appointment at 515-480-9789 or 515-228-3293. My nostalgia is triggered by that line in the song, "And Mom and Dad can hardly wait for school to start again." That's my memory of Christmas vacation with my grade school children in the 60s. A little note of realism.
Well, Susan, I must say that at the Story City Herald, the newspaper in Story City, we still publish letters from Santa. They'll be published this week in the Herald. And they're always a fun thing to read because it'll be a whole different listing of toys. I can already anticipate. I want an iPad. I want video games. But also, I'm impressed that the kids often want something for someone other than themselves. It's not all I want. You know, it's often something my sister or brother would want. And I've found that children love to share at Christmas. If you take them caroling with you or my Y Club boys years ago adopted families for Christmas. And we went out to spend Christmas with the family. We bought them a turkey and a tree, all the toys from Toys R Tots and Salvation Army, and some we bought ourselves. And it was a very excellent thing because the kids in my YMCA group are from West Des Moines, and we went into the inner city in Des Moines. So they actually saw how these folks lived and met the children and the families. And it was just wonderful to watch these teenage boys relate to this family. I have some very good stories about that. But, you know, when she was talking about those aluminum trees, I remember those. They were a fad in the 50s, and my Aunt Ruby sent one from California. And I always thought they were garish. You know, it looked like Christmas in a place of adult entertainment or something. They were somehow offensive to me, but they were really popular in the 50s, these aluminum trees. They looked so modern, and they were just a part of the 50s. You know, everything is new, and the old is decried, but the new is wonderful. And you know, what better thing in a time of jet aircraft and the beginning of the space program than to have an aluminum Christmas tree? It was so futuristic, you know. So I remember that, and I remember all the fine traditions we had in Story City that we still have today, like our Christmas tree in the center of the town and all the wonderful events around Yuletide that we still have to this day. I think in a small town, Christmas is particularly prized, and I think that red thread that runs through your history, she was talking about the outcomes of these children, who they became. She knows those people as children and as adults. And so it was interesting that this boy became an engineer or whatever. You know, that really adds to the nostalgia of it and also the perspective of how achieving small-town kids are. They go out in the world and they make a place for themselves. And I think our fine schools and small-town support systems build a person who's adroit at working out in the world and succeeding.
You know? Well, I think that's true. And, of course, the fact that a lot of people, if they don't still live in Slater, they have attics in Slater. So when they set out the call for the antique toys, they must have had a wonderful time. I noticed that one of the members of the Historical Society board put together the log cabin with the Lincoln logs. And I thought, oh, it's too bad they don't let the people who come to the exhibit play, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, when I was a boy, my dad, in secret, and so I don't know how he did it, because I was a little boy. I was home a lot. Of course, I went to school. But he built an exact replica of our barn. And you opened the side, and even the stanchions moved. All this intricate stuff. And I played with it, and I left it out in the weather, and it's gone. That's my most precious gift ever, because my dad spent so many hours doing it. It was a total surprise and really good workmanship, too, you know. I'd love to have that back, and I let it disintegrate. At the time, you see its utility, but not its nostalgic value. And that's why Barbies and the original box sell for thousands of dollars.
Well, actually, you brought up a story that I wasn't sure I was going to tell, but Barbies were not in this exhibit, and I was a little surprised because I remember in the 60s that my daughter wanted a Barbie. And I guess I was pretty prissy at the time. I said, nobody has a body like that, or large wardrobes, because you had lots of expensive clothes you could buy for the Barbie. So she never got to have a Barbie. She got to have Skipper, Barbie's little sister, but she didn't ever get to have a Barbie. But let's go to the next generation. So when her daughter was born, who was the oldest of our grandchildren, I think one of the very first toys she ever got was a Barbie. And I bought that Barbie for her because by that time the Barbies came with all these accessories, not just the clothes. And this was a teacher Barbie who had glasses and a globe and all these cute little things that for a schoolroom. And I thought, well, now that's a nice role model Barbie. But with each additional granddaughter, there were more Barbies. But they didn't have lovely wardrobes for them. As a matter of fact, what they did was to take them in the bathtub, and occasionally with their new Barbie clothes on, which made their mothers very unhappy. So basically, they were bathtub toys, and they'd play with the bathtub and have them stacked up by the bathtub for the next time. And when the girls would get together, we had five granddaughters eventually. What they wanted to do was play Barbies. They were very social Barbies. They would come visit each other and play in each other's houses or on each other's bedspreads or whatever. And I just thought, what a transformation. And I don't know, are Barbies still being sold?
I'm sure they are. And for boys, it's G.I. Joe. And you don't dare call them a doll, you know. But, you know, nowadays, there's so many toys that are not as tangible as that. You have all the iPads and the games. But I still think there's a place for those traditional toys, too, because number one, it's tangible. You can play with it. You can use your imagination. And every time I've seen children unwrap presents, they love the gifts, you know, the little, some real small children. They love the gifts, but then you come back an hour later and they're playing with the boxes, you know,
yes,
that they came in. So they like to invent their own adventures, too.
This is KHOI Community Radio, and your hosts for today, Susan Franson and Paul Wearson, have been visiting earlier with Mary O'Donnell and the Dear Santa exhibit of Letters to Santa combined with pictures and antique toys at the Slater Area Historical Society.
And now we have with us in the studio Reggie Greenlaw to play a song he wrote this year. Welcome, Reggie. And what inspired this song?
I was getting a bit tired, like many people do in the midst of the Christmas season, of everything going on except things that you really want to do, all the obligations, all the things you have to do, people you might not even care for very much that suddenly you're surrounded by, and situations you don't want to be in. So this one I just entitled, I Don't Want No Ho-Ho-Hos. I don't want no ho-ho-hos. I don't want no ho-ho-hos. Don't you tell me ho, ho, ho. Don't want to see it on your clothes. I don't want no ho, ho, ho's. I don't want more Christmas treats. I don't want no Christmas treats. 'Cause you know I'll eat those eats. Get type 2 diabetes. I don't want no Christmas treats. I know it sounds like treason. I don't like the Christmas season. Yes, it's true. Shopping gets me wired. Obligations get me tired. And it's just too much to chew on. Then there's my racist Uncle Frank. Don't want to see my Uncle Frank. Try to talk and draw a blank. You can take that to the bank. Don't want to see my Uncle Frank. 'Cause you talk about his hobbies and how he hates the commies and go on and on and on. Here, tell a racist joke. Give me a wink and poke and give me a dead. I don't get it. Don't want no Hallmark Christmas shows. Don't want no Hallmark Christmas shows. Insert here, I am about to give away the ending to tonight's A Very Special Hallmark Christmas Show. If you don't want to know the stunning conclusion of this very special episode, please cover your ears and hum softly. On tonight's very special Hallmark Christmas, a grumpy, lonely dad finally forgives his son. Mom gets her dying Christmas wish. The kids all come home just in the nick of time. A mysterious envelope under the tree turns out to be Grandma's last love letter from Grandpa, who died in the war. A wayward puppy who shows up on the doorstep finds a home at last. The whole family steps outside and looks at a bright star, and what? There are two new stars in the sky. The family looks lovingly at each other and sighs because I guess everything's going to be okay. Next year, for a very special Hallmark Christmas, in a rundown cafe, an angel posing as a waitress pretends to mix up the orders for two lonely people who eventually fall in love. The short order cook turns out to be God, who loves it when things turn out well and makes a fantastic pumpkin pie for everybody, no charge. I don't want no Hallmark shows. I don't want no Hallmark shows. Don't want no Hallmark shows. Can't take one more of those. I don't want no Hallmark shows. All I want is easy, and it really would please me if we had a little less. A little peace and quiet and a slightly lighter diet of this whole Christmas mess. Gonna lose these Christmas blues. Gonna lose these Christmas blues. Sit in recliner chairs, kick feet in the air. Gonna lose these Christmas blues. Gonna lose these Christmas blues. Gonna lose these Christmas blues.
That song really caught the spirit of what I think a lot of people feel at this time, including the part that I don't like the Christmas season.
It sounds like treason. You feel un-American if you don't jump all over Christmas season. That was the idea of the song. There's guilt that comes with not being thrilled about something that everybody seems to be enamored with.
Our other guest who's here with us today is Brian Esslinger, who is a professor of religion at ISU. And you must deal with the complexities of this season in many ways. Is that right, Ryan?
Well, it is interesting to think about how much the Christmas season is part of our civil religious landscape and how it transcends any particular religious ideology. And Reggie's song really hits on those elements of it that are not religious in intent or content, but overwhelm us. Usually it starts around Thanksgiving time. They start having the economic predictions that begin that guilt drive of you must go out and shop, otherwise our economy will collapse. So there's that aspect of it, and the way that the advertising starts earlier and earlier, and the Christmas music starts in the shopping malls earlier and earlier, and advertising, and it is just so overwhelming. So there's that aspect of it. And also noticing as even our community becomes more and more diverse, there are those other holidays that always have to seem to take the back seat, as there was the Diwali festival that happened not long ago, and then we're in the midst of Hanukkah. And yet they're almost the second-hand or stepchildren holidays to the overwhelming role that Christmas plays in our larger society.
Well, it's ironic that, of course, as you know historically, Brian, I'm sure, the pilgrims, those wonderful people who gave us right. Thanksgiving, actually banned Christmas.
Right. Yeah, there are a number of Christian professions that, since Christmas was non-scriptural and all the celebrations around are non-scriptural, the date's not specified in any way in Scripture. It's always kind of alluded to. And you know, looking at the history of how Christmas itself developed from being a movable feast to having a set date, although we don't know for certain, the scholarship isn't certain on it, there seems to be some interesting connections to the other festivals that predated the Christmas festival that happened in orientation to the solstice, you know, as Christianity became the religion of the empire. I don't think it's a coincidence that suddenly Christmas began to be celebrated. Prior to that, most of the church fathers did not recommend celebrating births. That was something that the other groups did. And so the birth of Jesus was not a set celebration, but it kind of evolved. And then as there was the expectation of the empire that Christianity would be the primary religion and eventually the only religion, to have that connection to those pre-existing festivals.
The timing was also exquisite, right?
Yeah, exactly. So,
well, I have to ask you, since you referred twice to the empire, but
right.
other people might think it's the empire that strikes back.
Good timing. Yeah,
we're in Star Wars right. season two yeah. now, aren't we? Yes, the Roman Empire, where there were the, you know, that was connected mm-hmm. with Mithridates' birth and Saturnalis' birth.
I believe you told me that Christmas wasn't celebrated until sometime after Christianity became the official religion of the Roman Empire.
As it was developing, when we get into the third century, is and so there is that coincidence, then it became a set tradition. But it is interesting, there's the Take Back Christmas movement that we hear about. And it really is around the same kinds of things that Reggie's singing about. You know, the movement for those people for whom Christmas is primary to their religious profession, their professions of faith, to see it becoming something secularized or something commercialized, for them robs it of their meaning. Where do we find meaning? You know, that's one of the elegant places we're in our society today, is that we have the ability to create meaning. Whether we go back to the very ancients and who were first celebrating because, look at that, the days are getting longer, the sun's actually come back. Yeah, that's mm-hmm. worth celebrating. So looking at that aspect of it, or if you're in Christianity and want to have it simplified to that element, that becomes something for each of us to be challenged with. How do we take control of that part for ourselves?
One of the most interesting to me is the Christmas tree, because, of course, there is nothing biblical about the Christmas
right.
tree. There is nothing Christian about the Christmas tree. And people who are upset because the Christmas tree somehow is a Christian holiday symbol. Well, it's a Christian holiday symbol, but it has nothing to do with Christianity.
Right. And the wreaths that they're all, you know, those symbols are linked to people who really knew long winter's nights, mm-hmm. you know, coming out of the Nordic areas, where bringing the evergreen wreath into the house with that circular symbol was that it was a sign of hope. You know, it's this belief life will actually return. So let's bring in these green wreaths. Let's put them in a circle that, mm-hmm. that will have this symbolic hope that will actually come back. And that's one of the things that winter shows, that it is that time of mourning and loss. And I think that's one of the other things that Reggie's song reflects, mm-hmm. is that expectation that you're going to be up and you're going to be happy, doggone it.
And you can't always feel like you're supposed to feel.
Right. You can never feel like you're supposed to feel.
No. It's like looking at a Facebook entry and everybody's so happy and you find out these people are getting divorced and that yeah. person's really being beaten. Put on your best face no matter how you feel. It feels dishonest.
And I think that's one of the troubling things that people run into in this time of year, is that expectation that you are to be up, that you are to be happy. You know, and so then how creating that space, and how as a society, how do we create that space and allow people to understand there could be some very palliative aspects to being able to go into a winter's night and just rage against the darkness and you know, allow for that aspect to be a real understanding, how we experience the darkness, and not try and hide, not try and run away from the darkness, not try and illuminate every space with this mock joy, but just allowing ourselves that chance. You know, when we talk about the whole idea of expectations, too, and what those create, I think the Buddha really had it right with that idea that life is suffering, and that suffering is rooted in expectation. You know, I just so vividly remember as a little kid going to bed on Christmas Eve just filled with expectations and getting up the next morning. And even if I got every toy I wanted, even if there was everything I wanted was there, there was still that letdown.
It's inevitable.
Yeah. And that, because nothing can ever meet those kinds of heightened expectations, which those TV dramas create as well, the sense that everything will come together, everything will be perfect on Christmas, when we know the reality isn't that. There are a lot of people who struggle with, you know, with divorce and difficult families. Everything isn't made perfect just by the date on the calendar and the expectation.
It's so hard to build it on a foundation that's shaky.
Right. And for me, I like the idea of when we think about what is the season, what do we hope for the season to be about? You know, a time where we show compassion and caring to one another, not with stuff that we buy, you know, not putting the pressure on ourselves to try and get the perfect gift, but maybe we spend time with one another. Maybe instead of worrying about being with the people we feel like we should, we get the people we love or the people we care for, and then we extend ourselves to try and care for those who are in need around us. You wonder how that would change our not wanting the ho, ho, ho if we ended that season instead feeling that we'd given something back.
Yeah, and having your center before you go off into something, something you own instead of something that's imposed on you.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Reggie and Brian, for helping us to take a step back and look at Christmas with fresh eyes. For those of you who are just tuning in, we have been talking with Brian Esslinger, professor of religion at Iowa State University, and singer-songwriter Reggie Greenlaw, who sang, "I don't want no ho-ho-hos," to interject a little humor about the tension of the holidays.
That was all real good stuff. I like that. Very good. By the way, this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, 89.1 FM, and we're going to return now to Brian Esslinger for a folktale.
To get back to the Christmas greenery, I believe you told me that you had a story about the tree that doesn't come from Northern Europe. What is that story, Brian?
This is a story that comes from the Cherokee people. And so it's a story that tells of long ago, at the time when the plants and the trees could still talk to each other. They lived close to each other and would share things. But yet even then, when the winter time came, the birds would still go south to where it was warm and then return again when spring came. Except this one year when Sparrow had become injured and he was not able to fly south. So he convinced his family to go ahead and telling them when they returned in the spring that he would be healed and he would look to see them then. And so with a sad song, they all took off to the south. Now, Sparrow knew that if he didn't find shelter to get through the cold times, that he wouldn't make it, that he would die. And so first he went to Oak, proud old Oak, and he said, "Oak, I have been injured and I'm not able to fly south. And I know that if I don't find shelter, I will probably die. Will you please let me find shelter from the cold times in your branches and among your leaves?" Now, Oak was kind of old and kind of a codger and very proud. And he wasn't sure what the other trees would think if he let little Sparrow, into his branches. And so he said, "No, Sparrow, I'd rather not have you for a winter companion. Why, go ask someone else." So Sparrow was sad in his heart, but he did. He went off, and then he came to Maple, beautiful maple tree, and said, "Maple, I'm injured and unable to fly south. I need to find a place for shelter, otherwise I will surely die. Would you please shelter me on your branches and in your leaves?" And Maple, who maybe suffered from a bit of vanity, thought, "Well, this little sparrow doesn't really match the color of my leaves." And so Maple said, "No, Sparrow, I'd rather not have you for a companion for the winter. Please go ask someone else." And so Sparrow did, went from one tree to another, hearing the same, "No, I don't think so." Sad in his heart, he thought he had no other chance, but wasn't ready to give up on life just yet. When he saw a little pine tree, he thought, what else could he do but ask? And so he went, "Pine tree, I'm injured and unable to fly south. Would you please shelter me in your branches among your leaves? For if I don't find shelter, surely I will die." Now, Pine Tree thought, I'm the least of all the trees. and I really don't have much for leaves, more just needles. But Pine Tree could hear the sorrow in Sparrow's heart and couldn't help but be moved. And so Pine Tree said, "As small as my branches are, I will offer them to you as shelter. And even though I have more needles than leaves, whatever protection they will provide, I will offer it to you." And so Sparrow burrowed in close to Pine Tree's trunk. And there the thick branches kept out the cold and the needles kept out the snow. And they passed the long winter's nights telling stories and singing songs together. And then as the sun returned and the snow began to melt and thaw, Sparrow heard his family coming and they sang a song of rejoicing. And that song reached the ear of the Creator, who had heard all that had passed in this last season. And so he called for a council of trees. And he said to the great trees, he said, "You who have the most, you would not offer anything to one who was in need, to poor little Sparrow in his time of need. And so, because of your vanity and your pride, when the cold times come, your beautiful leaves will wither and die and blow away." And then the Creator turned to Pine Tree and said, "You, who seem to be the least, you offered yourself in compassion to one who needed you. And so your leaves will remain green through the whole season, and you will be a beacon of hope and a reminder of life yet to come, even when the times seem darkest." And so from that day to this, the mighty trees lose their leaves, and yet little Pine Tree reminds us of hope yet to come.
That's a Cherokee story.
Yes.
Well, that was a very interesting contribution by Brian, because what we have here is a great story about how Christmas evolved out of a multitude of traditions in the Christian church. And he added there a wonderful fable. And a fable is a great way to teach and a great way to actually provide a moral lesson to children, and a wonderfully poetic way to do it. And then the other Christmas stories are often family stories. And we're going to call on Maureen Corday to tell a real poignant story about her family for Christmas.
This is a personal story, and it is a true story from my past when I was a little girl. When I was a little girl, I grew up in a big white house. And the Christmases we had in that big white house always seemed to be as humongous and extraordinary as the house itself. When I was little, my mother worked, and no other mothers in the neighborhood worked. But my mother would trade away holiday after holiday after holiday to make sure that she was there on Christmas, for indeed it was her special and most favorite holiday. When we went to buy the tree, we all knew that we would give Mother all the time she needed to pick out whatever tree she wanted. We would bundle up, get in our car, go to the lot, and Mother would look at every single solitary tree. Now, my mother didn't drive, so my father had to take her shopping and other places, and many times I had heard him say, "Oh, for heaven's sakes, Ree, aren't you done? Can't we go home now?" But never, ever, when she was looking for a Christmas tree, was anything like that uttered. She would peruse every single tree and then select one, plus a second smaller one. If my sister Kathy, who was 3 years older than I, and I were good during the selection process, we perhaps got our own very little tree to put in our bedroom, and that was so that we could decorate it, because only the grown-ups and the older children decorated the tree with my mother. We would put both trees on the top of the car, bring them home, and my father would put the big tree in a stand. And then he would assess, and if there was a blank spot or a crooked branch or anything that was not perfect, he would drill a hole in that big tree, cut off a branch from the small tree, and insert it in the large one, so that we had the biggest, the most dynamic, and the most incredible trees in the entire neighborhood. Decorating them was a festive occasion filled with popcorn popcorn and hot chocolate and my sisters and I dancing through the lights and my mother and father telling us, be careful now that you don't cut yourself. Mother would decorate with ornaments that were not bought at places like Kresge's or Walgreens, but indeed they were purchased at places like Joseph's Jewelers and Yonkers. So special were her Christmas ornaments that when she died, she delegated certain ornaments to certain children in her will. We all wanted them. Some of them came from Ireland and others came from all over the world. We always kept our tree up until January 6th, Feast of the Epiphany. And taking it down, indeed, was a very nostalgic occasion. One year I can remember my mother said she just hated to take it down because our bird Noel loved to sit in the tree, and it made her so sad to have him back in his cage. Every year when we would open presents around that tree, I would be many times designated as the Santa Claus. I'd pass out this to my brother Michael and this to my brother Tom and this to my sister Patricia and so on. I would pass out gifts to aunts and uncles and cousins who came to visit for Christmas, and I did pass out gifts to my mother and my father, but I never passed out gifts that said, from Tom to Rhea or Rhea to Tom, from Mom to Dad or Dad to Mom. I noticed, I believe, in about third grade that my parents never exchanged Christmas gifts. Seeing this, I began to question. I asked my parents repeatedly, how come you guys don't give each other Christmas gifts? Don't you love each other anymore? My parents would laugh and say, oh, no, 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 indeed, the tree is our gift. The tree's not a gift, I would reply. You have to have a tree. As I got older, I began to press them more about it. One year, my friend Karen Thomas's mother got a diamond and my friend Nancy Curran's mom got a mink coat. And I was concerned that my mother was not getting anything from my father. But again, she reassured me that the tree was their gift. When I got into high school and older, I really didn't pay too much attention to what my parents were giving each other, and I was more worried about what my boyfriend was going to give to me. But just as I graduated from university, my father passed away, and I, being the youngest, the only one not married or with children, was asked to come home for a while and take care of my mother until she got on her feet. That meant that I was there before Christmas. And indeed, I put up a Christmas tree for her. And when she saw it, she came in and took it down and said, I don't want that this year. Your father's not here. But Mom, I said, you're going to have to celebrate Christmas without him and get used to it. I don't care, she said. I'm not having a tree if your father's not here. She did indeed, though, begin to give all my sisters and brothers and I money for presents for children and $100 for a Christmas tree. We would tell her that we didn't need it, but year after year, she would insist on giving it to us. And always when she did in the envelope with the $100, it said, this is for your tree from your father and I. For many years, my sisters and brothers tried to put up a tree for my mother, but she just wouldn't have it. And so we settled on making sure that she always had a beautiful wreath on the front door. When my sons were about 5 or 6 and 3 or 4, my mother was sitting in the family room one week, oh, a few days before Christmas. She had one of them on her lap and one next to her. And when she finished reading a Christmas story to them, she said, don't you think the tree is beautiful, boys? They said yes, and she said, you know, the Christmas tree was the greatest gift I could ever get. My oldest son, Patrick, looked at her and said, but Grandma, a tree's not a gift. It's something you have to have. No, she said, the tree was always a gift to me from your grandfather. Why would he give you a tree? Patrick asked. Well, when I was a little girl, your age, Patrick, my mother explained, we were very, very poor. My father was a lawyer, but he wasn't as good of a lawyer as he was a drinker, and inevitably he drank up the law practice. One of his relatives gave him a farm thinking he could farm, but he drank a lot better than he farmed. He drank up the twins' identical clothes, and he drank up our Valentines and our Christmas gifts and our shoes every fall. And so we never had a Christmas tree until one year when one of the neighbors knocked on our door and said that he needed to clear some timber off his land. And if we wanted to bring an axe and a sled, we could cut down a Christmas tree for ourselves. My sisters and brothers and I bundled ourselves up and went and cut down the most beautiful tree you could imagine. We dragged it home, and not having a Christmas tree stand, we put it in a bucket with dirt and sand. Having no ornaments, we took old newspapers and envelopes and folded them in fan shapes and all sorts of crinkly things and decorated the tree. We didn't have any candles, and there was no electricity then, but we took the small stubs of some old candles and attached them to the tree. And on Christmas Eve, and only Christmas Eve, we lit the tree for about 5 minutes. We had buckets in front of it so that if anything started on fire, we could grab them and put it out. And we held hands and sang Silent Night. And as we did, I made a promise to myself that when I grew up, no matter what I did or where I lived, I would always have the most beautiful, outstanding Christmas tree in the whole entire world. Your grandfather and I dated for 5 years because it was the Depression and we didn't have enough money to get married. And during that time, your grandfather and I learned each other's stories very well. And knowing my story about Christmas, your grandfather promised me on the day that we got married that every single Christmas for my gift, he would give me the most beautiful Christmas tree in the whole world. And so not to negate the value of that gift, he promised that he too would take it back as his gift. My mother looked at my sons and she said, "And that, my young love, is exactly why the tree is a gift, not something that you have to have. And it is why, ladies and gentlemen, why I learn that my parents did indeed exchange a wonderful, wonderful Christmas gift every single year of their lives."
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. We've been your hosts, Susan Franzen and
Paul Wearson.
We started out the show with Joel Bryan, the manager at Seven Oaks, Mary O'Donnell, who welcomed us to the Slater Area Historical Association last Sunday for a tour of the exhibit Dear Santa, with letters from the Slater News from the 40s, 50s, and 60s, illustrated with pictures, vintage decorations, and antique toys. Then we heard from Brian Esslinger, professor of religion at Iowa State University, and singer-songwriter Reggie Greenlaw. We closed with a tale by storyteller Maureen Corte.
Local Talk will be rebroadcast at noon and 7 p.m. You can listen to today's Local Talk show and any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. There you will also find information about our guests, along with relevant links to today's stories. And you can like us on Facebook and get updates on all our show postings in your news feed.
Local Talk was engineered by Richard Morrison. Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was It's Beginning to Look a Lot Like Christmas by Bing Crosby from the CD White Christmas and I Don't Want No Ho Ho Ho's, performed live in our studio by songwriter Reggie Greenlaw.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. And if you would like to join the team as we reporter, contact us at 515-292-2878 or contact us through our website, khoifm.org.
If you've enjoyed the show, tell your friends. And if you've contributed to our recent membership drive, thank you.
Well, you know, studies show that generosity is the most effective way to make you feel better. So we hope you're all feeling the warm glow that comes from knowing that you helped make it possible to hear KHOI in 2016. Thanks for listening, and
see you again on the radio.